tonight's talk is on actually experiencing the three characteristics. The Dharma is not an intellectual exercise. It's not about learning a whole lot and being really clever about it. It does require some consideration of the teachings in order to guide us through our exploration of what's really just our own experience. The main point is that it's about experiencing the Dharma as we go through our day, or as we sit in our meditation. So we practice through formal meditation and then try to be mindful during the day. And this practice is meant to train the mind so that we're able to see things as they truly are. And this common phrase, things as they truly are, is really common in the suttas. It also often appears as seeing the truth of what is. And it means that through this practice, we learn to see past a curtain of delusion that has naturally descended on all of us in the course of our upbringing. As living organisms, our bodies need things. They need food in the form of other living things. Bodies also need water, shelter, clothing, and other things that have to be obtained, usually through some kind of work. And without these things, our bodies die. So naturally, we're very focused on obtaining them. And then, of course, there are luxuries and things that we crave because we're social animals, things that have to do with status and our position in society. And our brains are just trained from infancy to see the world in terms of things we can get. And this is the fundamental grammar of our experience. The subject is I, the verb is get, and the object is things. That's the grammar of human life. So the purpose of this analysis that I just presented is not to lead you intellectually to enlightenment, if only because it simply doesn't work that way. My analysis is just to encourage you to undertake the practice of looking at life differently from the normal way. We're all capable of this kind of a shift of perception, which will lead to liberation. But that shift requires training the mind. And in this process, we come to relate very differently to our lives. To others, we will still look like we're going about business as usual. But internally, it's a whole new ballgame. And this transformation starts with three clues. There are three places we're encouraged to look in our normal experience. And if we study these three aspects of our existence, then that curtain of delusion will crack open. And with increasing clarity, as we keep looking at these places, and we will see a very different world. So for this evening, let's put aside intellectual questions and arguments and just look. the first place to look is change. Take a photograph of your garden or someone else's on a windy day and leave the aperture open for 10 seconds. What are you going to see in that picture? It's a very slow shutter speed, and the wind is whipping the garden around, and it's going to be a photograph of blur. Now take another photograph and set the shutter speed fast. Take a picture of the same garden, and you're going to see hydrangeas and roses and geranium. They're going to be very distinct. They're going to be dead still, like frozen statues. Now, against my many teachers, actually, advice, when I went on retreats, I would take photographs. And I did it because I saw that it was changing my view of reality to do this. Because, like everyone else, I had grown up to think of the world in terms of these frozen snapshots of things, absolutely free of blur. It was just a clear, discrete, easily identifiable thing. But when I left my mind open to what really happens in my experience, I saw the solid lines swimming and blending and blurring continuously, even on days when there wasn't any wind, figuratively speaking. So I was beginning to realize that the frozen photo concept wasn't right. It makes a nice photograph. You'd rather keep that one than the blurry one. But that's not really how things are. When I'd been practicing intently for about 6 or 7 years, my father began to die. I had already spent one day a week for several years in a hospice ward, so I was very sensitive to what was unfolding with him and my own responses to it. As I watched the changes in his body, which were accelerated by his cancer, I remembered all the ways that he had appeared in the past. There was the young man who tossed me into the air when I was 4 years old. There was the mature man who attended my law school graduation. And there was the older man who spent retirement on his own lobster boat in Maine and traveled the world with my mom. Which one of these was really my dad? They were all so different. And now, as he was approaching death, he was changing very rapidly, right in front of my eyes. And it made me see very sharply that he had always been changing, and so had I. Not just physically, but mentally. So there were all of these snapshots of quite different people in my memory of this being I called my father, and also of myself. In the Samyutta Nikaya, the Buddha is quoted as saying, "There is no materiality, no material thing, whatever, O monks. And no feeling, perception, formations, or consciousness, whatever, that is permanent, everlasting, changeless, and abiding." By the time I began taking month-long retreats, I was kind of clear on this concept of change, a Nietzsche that everything is impermanent. Nothing stays the same. Not my dad, not me, not the garden. take a picture of it 2 weeks from now, it's going to be really different than it is now. Everything is changing. So this curtain of delusion had already kind of cracked open for me. But I was about to find out that I had a lot to learn. My practice on retreats naturally gravitated toward concentration and the jhanas. And I was very fortunate to have Gil Fronsdale and Jack Kornfield as my guides as I explored the jhanas. As I became familiar with this territory of the mind, they guided me. And I was so fascinated, I really thought that just the experience alone was what it was all about. But then Jack told me what to do after I left the jhana states, after this time of really powerful concentration was over. He said, just form the intention as I got up from my sitting to see the three characteristics of existence. Now, we've already kind of looked at change. The other two are dukkha, or suffering, and anatta, which is no self, no permanent identity of anything. So one of the areas of Buddhist scripture, the Visuddhimagga, says that this characteristic of impermanence does not ordinarily become apparent to people because when rise and fall, the arising and the passing away of phenomena, are not given attention, this change, this impermanence, is concealed by the apparent continuity of things. However, when this appearance of continuity is disrupted, when we see how things come into being and pass away, then we really begin to see the true nature of impermanence. So, in other words, things seem to stay the same for a while, just like a rock does. You know, rock, how is this changing, right? Well, it is. It's affected by the elements and by time. And these changes happen very slowly. So you sit and you watch a rock, and first of all, it's probably not a good use of your time. It's going to take a lot of time to see it change. But it's still changing. And eventually, it's going to be sand. Eventually. So once we consciously see through this apparent stability of things, then the game is up. And Jack's method of disrupting that delusion was that I would have this intention, may I see change. And I didn't go out from the meditation hall looking for it. It would come to me. There were abundant examples all around me of change. And what I remember now many years later is the ones that really had an emotional impact on me. And it was February. There were a lot of rain. And the frogs were singing their love songs every night, loud and insistent. And soon there were puddles all over Spirit Rock. And some of the puddles were filled up with these little round globs, a lot of little round globs. And then the puddle nearby was filling up with little wiggly forms. And then the rain stopped, and the puddles dried up, and those little globs dried out, and the little forms stopped wiggling. And my heart filled with compassion for all those frogs that were never going to be. But then it started raining again. And there were more puddles, and they were filled with shiny little globs, and nearby puddles exploded with more wiggly bodies, and this cycle just repeated itself without skipping a beat. And, you know, I suppose eventually frogs came out of the puddle and hopped away and started singing the song. But wherever I looked, I saw this process continuing, and there was the compassion, but it was joined by sympathetic joy and equanimity now, because I could see the leaves rotting at the base of plants, and I knew they were feeding the flowers, and I could see the birds eating the insects, catching them on the wing, and then I could see the broken eggshells, and I knew that animals were, you know, the insects had fed the birds, and now the birds were feeding the little animals that got up in the tree. And everywhere I looked, this change, life was flowing like a river, and there was an endless losing and gaining and tumbling from one form to another. It isn't just one thing that arises, appears for a while to exist, and then fades away, but that all of what we perceive as things continuously join in this vast, unified process. Okay, now to get a little more concrete. This was a poem that was in a holiday card I got several years ago. It takes a somewhat more lighthearted view of what I've been describing. It's called Listen. I threw a snowball across the backyard. My dog ran after to bring it back. It broke as it fell, scattering snow over snow. My dog stood confused, seeing and smelling nothing. She searched in widening circles as I called her. She looked at me and said, as clearly in silence as if she had spoken, "I know it's here. I'll find it." And she went back to the center and started the circles again. I called her two more times before she came slowly, stopping once to look back. That was this morning. I'm sure that she's forgotten. I've had some trouble putting it out of my mind. That's a glimpse through the curtain by the poet Miller Williams. So what did the dog see?
Change. A ball.
Yeah. And what was the ball? It's just snow that took on a form, and then the form was gone. The dog was totally fooled by it. So the connection to dukkha, the next characteristic of all phenomena, should be pretty obvious. Dukkha, suffering. If we see a life as something separate from this river of life, then every dried up tadpole is a tragedy. Same for inanimate objects. Each boulder that comes smashing down a hill to shatter into fragments will seem like something grand that's lost forever. And if we get attached to what we think things are, then their inevitable changes will bring us suffering. Our dukkha is a direct result of our delusion that things are permanent, or our conviction that they should be. And because of our failure to see impermanence, we want to hold on to things. But since they're always changing, our effort to cling to them is like resisting a rope that's slipping through our hands. We just get rope burn. So the last time I interviewed with Joseph Goldstein at the Forest Refuge on a retreat there, he quoted his teacher telling him, "Don't be fooled by your moods." And I didn't really receive that teaching very happily because moods are so hard to see. And they sneak up on you and they take control and they feel very real. And I've always defined them really as the quality of life. If I'm in a good mood, life is good. If I'm in a bad mood, life is bad. And I want the good moods to last. And I don't want to be in a bad mood. Thank you. So what Joseph was telling me was that even this is a delusion. This notion that a mood has some reality about my relationship with my life. It's just a mood. And if I can see through it, then I can go on with my life and still be in a bad mood. I don't have to be a nasty person to other people. Now, please understand, I am not trivializing mood disorders. I've had plenty of experience with depression myself, and I respect it. And I'm also not trivializing death or grief. I take tadpoles very seriously. But when we understand that everything is going to change and that nothing can be held on to, we can spare ourselves a lot of suffering. And, you know, really the way to come to understand this is to watch. The first place to look is with the change. That's the easiest, really. It's kind of low-hanging fruit. And then to see how our resistance to change, to the inevitable death of those hundreds of tadpoles, led me to sadness, to a kind of suffering. And that any snapshot that we take is going to be misleading. It might be nice photography, but that's not real life. It's not the way experience happens. There is always this changing going on, the suffering that goes with it if we resist it. And then the third characteristic is because everything is changing, nothing has an independent, ongoing identity in and of itself. The globs don't stay globs. The tadpoles don't stay tadpoles. The frogs don't stay frogs. Everything changes. And this includes me. You know, I look back at some of the behaviors that I remember doing decades ago, and I can't believe that belonged to me. How could I ever do that? I still take responsibility for them, but that's part of an ethical process and not part of any enduring me. I know that's not me. There have been many times when I've tried to identify my me-ness, me/ness, and I've never found any such a thing. it's just like that boulder that's shattered into rocks when it comes down the hill, and then those little rocks are pulverized into sand. And in all of this process of life, there's no me that has kept going over the years. My mood, my psychological experience, totally changing. I don't even relate to ways that I used to think. Can't understand it anymore. So self is a conclusion that all of humanity has jumped to, based on a process of examining our experience erroneously. Lifetimes of repeating this assumption of self have ground this prejudice deeper and deeper into our psyches until it's become the organizing principle of both personality and culture. All human activity revolves around this idea of self. Nevertheless, it's still wrong. Just because innumerable people believe something doesn't make it true. And the way to free ourselves from this delusion is not through the intellect or reason, analysis. It's through just looking for and watching things as they really are as we go through our lives. Very mundane things that happen, that we see. And that we see when we're looking for these three characteristics of impermanence, suffering, and no self, no identity. Now, next week, we'll take a closer look at what we do experience as ourselves. Now, the traditional Buddhist analysis is, this is not yourself, that's not yourself, that's not yourself. I want to take a slightly different approach and talk about what you experience as yourself. I'll talk again about what I experience, but I'm really looking forward to, in fact, hopefully to some extent in tonight's discussion, you'll share how you experience this sense of permanence, of continuity, of self. And perhaps we can take a look at that through the lens of the three characteristics and get a better understanding of how we are deluded. This very normal way that everybody sees things wrong. Change, suffering, no self. The rise and fall of everything, material and psychological, can cause suffering. But when we learn to see it, it can also liberate us from suffering. Now, there's a Theravadin quote in the Digha Nikaya about what the Buddha said on his deathbed, but I really like a Mahayana version called the Parinirvana Sutra. I think it's just a little more poetically pleasing. And so I'm going to end by reading that. O bhikkhus, do not grieve. Even if I were to live in the world for as long as a kalpa, 100,000 million years, our coming together would have to end. You should know that all things in the world are impermanent. Coming together inevitably means parting. Do not be troubled, for this is the nature of life. Diligently practicing right effort, you must seek liberation immediately. Within the light of wisdom, destroy the darkness of ignorance. Nothing is secure. Everything in this life changes. Always wholeheartedly seek the way of liberation. All things in the world, whether moving or non-moving, are characterized by disappearance and instability. Stop now. Do not speak. Time is passing. I am about to cross over. This is my final teaching. Thank you.